dumbbells. Fat.
Who?
Us.
Why?
55 cents. 55 cents to see a bunch of new cars that next month we could see free at any stoplight.
Ron Ananian.
It's not just that he's asking us to fix it. He's depending upon us. And so many times, this is what a local repair shop becomes. We become that point of dependency.
As far as I'm concerned, an auto show is just a preview of a used car lot.
The Car Doctor. Don't count on the tool to give you the golden bullet. Count on the tool to give you information so the thing between your ears can come to a conclusion. Does that make sense?
Right, I'm a fan.
All right. Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now...
Headlights built in the fenders, fenders built in the car, car built in Detroit, Detroit built in 1701.
Here's Ronnie.
Sometimes I feel like that, built in 1701, but then again, depends on the day of the week. Hello and welcome. Ron Ananian at your service. I hope you're all well. I hope you all had a great week, and thanks for stopping by and joining me this weekend or whenever it is you happen to be taking the time to listen to this radio show. I've got to tell you that, and I'm probably going to do something I'm not supposed to do, so Tom, you better get ready, because I was told not to do this, not to acknowledge it, not to address the situation, but... You know, it's too important to me. You know, I take this radio show very personally, and unfortunately, I probably do that because I care about it. I care about you. I'm just trying to give you the best possible information I can, and I'm trying to do that without putting too much emotion in, of which I'm guilty sometimes, and too much opinion in, of which I'm guilty sometimes, but maybe that's what you like about it. You know, it's me. You're buying me. I say it all the time. You come to the shop. This is what you get. It's no different. This is it exactly, except I'm standing there usually in a blue uniform and lately suspenders because my pants keep falling down because of CrossFit, but that's a whole nother conversation. Thanks for the imagery. I know I heard everybody say that. So I want to talk about, I was reading podcast reviews. Somehow I got a notice about some of the podcast reviews you're putting up, and because obviously this radio show then becomes a podcast, and just some of the reviews in general and the conversations in general that go on. And listen, I don't care if they're good or bad. I just want it to be factual, all right? And that's all I'm looking for. You know, I live by and die by the mantra, as long as more people swear by me than at me, I'm ahead of the curve, because you're not going to make everybody happy, and that's okay. Haters going to hate. There's a couple of podcast reviews that talk about the way we're approaching dispensing information about the electric car boom that's coming, all right? And I think it's going to be a big boom. It's going to be a kaboom. But that's just my opinion, which... I think I'm allowed to have. And one of them was interesting. One of them really caught my eye. It said that I was a liar because they believed I was single-handedly trying to sink the electric car industry, and the fact that I'm dispensing incorrect information about electric vehicles, that, you know, I said that you can't buy an electric car for less than $60,000. No, you need to clean out your ears. All right. Because this individual, like, consider a little bit of a coward. He wouldn't even post his name. He said just unknown poster. So there's somebody with a lot of guts. You know what? You want to take a shot? Put your hat in the ring. Stand up and be identified. He said that, you know, I said that you couldn't buy an electric vehicle for less than 60 grand. No, what I said was that you couldn't purchase a Tesla Model 3 at the time. And I checked it again the other day. The Tesla I was looking at, I believe it was the Model 3, was $59,862 by the time you added air conditioning, nice wheels, a nice interior, comfortable seats, and you picked it in a color other than white. And if you wanted the self-driving option, which was 10 grand all by itself. And that's what I had said that day on air. The poster then went on to point out that you can buy so many electric vehicles today for less than $60,000. You can buy a Nissan Leaf for $31,000. Yeah, you can. That's true. But how good of an electric vehicle is it? So I said, well, rather than just come up with my own anecdotes and my own comments, let me go right to the source. Let me go talk to one of the guys I know that fixes it. My friend Tim happens to be the shop foreman for one of the local Nissan dealers, and I spoke to Tim, and some of his comments aren't fit for air when I asked him about the Nissan Leaf and what he thought of it. But suffice it to say that he said, yes, it is a good $29,862 car. It's 30 grand. He said, his words, it rides like a buckboard with every spring that's broken. It basically will go 150 miles with a tailwind, provided you don't get stuck in too much traffic and turn on the air conditioning. And if you're planning to take long trips with it, plan to be parked a lot, hoping you can find a charging station, because it takes anywhere on house current. You ready for this? On household current, it takes 12 hours to charge a Nissan Leaf. 12 hours. Now, if you're fortunate enough, you can find a fast charger for this aforementioned wonderful Nissan Leaf for 30 grand. It's going to take you 4 to 6 hours on a 220-volt charger. And if you find a 440-volt charger, which is pretty much privy to the Nissan dealers, it's a $50,000 charger. It will take you 2 hours, but you have to find one that's available. You have to find one that's, you know, up and open. Tim then went on to point out to me that, you know, the 440 charger that they have at the dealership is available, that people will pull in, swipe their credit card, pay all kinds of money to charge up in less than 2 hours and be on their way. Who has 2 hours to gas up a vehicle is my first question. Who has 2 hours to sit there? What are we going to do? We're going to take lunch. We're going to have lunch at the local Nissan dealership and overlook the rows of new cars. That's going to be the exciting lunch hour that we want to spend our time doing. So when I talk what you perceive as bad about the electric car industry, you're hearing the bad. You just happen to hear my voice expressing it. I'm just the guy that's trying to deliver the news. And you're not willing to look at it. You've got to look at it because this is the future. This is what they're giving us. Now, I'm also a facts guy. I try to stay to the facts as much as possible and keep emotion and opinion out of it, although I will get emotional, I will get opinionated. I guess that's the stubborn Armenian in me that comes out, and I probably can't say that, but I did so there. You know, things like I will sit and take this article that Research Kathy, who's doing her job, came up with from an outfit called Torque News, and I read the article. I believe if you go research Torque News, charging an electric vehicle in public can cost triple what fueling up a gas guzzler does. And this story came out, written by John Gorham, July of this year. And he talks about the costs of charging a 2022 Chevy Bolt and how it was pricier than fueling up a gas-guzzling performance Dodge that put out 797 horsepower when he compared the costs. Now, is that me trying to sink the electric car industry? Or am I just presenting the facts as I read them? I think I'm presenting the facts. I'm presenting what the media is presenting. Isn't radio considered media? Isn't that what we're supposed to be? I'm not sure what it is you want to hear and say. You know, a long time ago I learned only blue clouds and wonderful thoughts should come out of your radio speaker because, you know, you tune in, you want to hear what's going on, but you want to hear it in a nice, presented, soft kind of way. That's what I'm trying to do, but I'm trying to keep your eyes wide open. You know, not everything I do may make sense to you, but there's a reason. We've had a caller on the show the past couple of weeks who's calling up with a problem vehicle, and I'm a little frustrated with this one individual because they're not diagnosing it. They're jumping around and changing parts, and no real diagnostics were done. And I've been a little, I won't say misleading, but I'm trying to take this individual down a path of making them diagnose something. And my point is, I received a couple of emails during the course of the week, which what I believe is the solution to. And they said, hey, how come you didn't tell them about this? And how come you didn't tell them about that? And a few of you took me to task because I didn't tell them about this or that, the silver bullet. My answer was simple, because sometimes I'm not here to hand out silver bullets. I'm here to hand out diagnostic approach, trying to teach you and make you better diagnosticians, because isn't that what it's all about? Are we here to just get answers for the moment and then move on to the next thing? I don't think it's often, and I'll have to take a look at myself, where I sit there and I say, boom, it's that, change it. I always give you a reason. I always give you an explanation. I always give you a what to test. And why do I do that? Number one, it would probably be pretty boring if you called up and said, my car does this, and I said, change this. Next guy, my car does that, it does this. Change that. Where would the interest be? Where would the learning be? You know what? Again, I'll say it again publicly, again and again and again. I hope the electric car industry makes it. I really do. But I need to see more proof of intelligent thought. All right? I need to see more proof that we're thinking our way through this and not just ramming it down our throats without any of forethought mentioned possibilities. Tim goes to Brazil every January and February. I'm not giving anyone any trade secrets. He takes vacation for a month or two in Brazil. And I asked him, I said, so Tim, what's the electric car program like down in Brazil? And he broke out laughing hysterically. He said, Brazil, electric car program? Ron, you're talking about a country that if we have indoor plumbing and running water, we're thrilled. He said, there's no way Brazil or most of South America will ever come up to an electric vehicle standard for the next 50 to 100 years. And I kept thinking to myself, so how is it that we as America, we're going to stand alone in this and we're going to do this all by ourselves? We're going to lead the way into what might be the most expensive folly we've ever done? That's an opinion, not a fact. We'll see. 855-560-9900. Ron Anion, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Don't go away.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Richard in New Jersey, 1990 Firebird and some bucking and rough running issues. Richard, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Thanks.
You're welcome, Ron.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
So it's a 1990 Firebird. It's a formula. It's a 305 V8 five-speed manual. And it's tune-port fuel injection, and the car is basically stock.
Okay.
So when you drive the car under a slight load at between 1,700 and 2,000 RPM, the car bucks and misses. Now it's not just a miss. It's like three or four cylinders go out, so it really runs awful. So the problem showed up as a crank no start. And so I looked into it, and I checked spark plugs. There was no spark to the plugs. So I cleaned the magnetic pickup coil in the distributor with sandpaper, and the engine ran fine.
Had the car been sitting any length of time, Richard?
Yes. The car is in my garage, and it gets about 3,000 miles per year. So it sits quite a lot, but I do drive it, you know, on short trips and just drive around the cruise nights and things like that.
Does it run okay cold and get progressively worse as the vehicle warms up, or is it bad right from the start?
It's bad. It's not as bad cold, but it's bad. You could certainly feel it.
Okay.
And it doesn't change that much from cold to hot.
Okay. And what have you done so far? What parts have you changed? What kind of diagnosis have you done?
Okay, so it's an OBD1 car, so I don't have any codes. So I'm just, you know, going to see the pants, trying things. So what I did was I replaced the distributor with a new distributor, and that's when I found this problem. So then I replaced it with a second new distributor, and I still had this problem of missing at 1,700, 2,000 RPM. So then I replaced the distributor again with an MSD Street Fire, and the same problem. So that's the distributor that's in the car now.
Okay. Is this the distributor behind the water pump, Richard, or is this still in the back of the motor? This is in the back of the motor, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
It's in the back of the motor. It's an old-fashioned small block.
Right.
So then I changed the wiring harness to the distributor. So that's a $20 part. It's just a wire that's about 9 inches long, and it's a pink and black, pink with a black wire.
Right.
So I replaced that. I disconnected my MSD and ran it from the existing ignition. I inspected the knock sensor and the wiring to the knock sensor. And let's see. Then I put 91-octane fuel in it. I set the timing with the EST unplugged.
Right.
To 0 degrees because it runs like it's way advanced timing. So, but that didn't help. I thought I was onto something there, but that didn't help. So I set the timing back 6 degrees, and now the timing is set back to 6 degrees base timing with the EST unplugged. New wires, new plugs, replace the coil with a known good coil, and then I remove the EGR and I put in a plate to block the port in the intake manifold from the exhaust gas to the intake manifold. And basically that's it. Okay, so one more other thing. I was checking the body ground. So I ran a new body ground from the accessory bracket to the shock tower.
Okay.
So that's where I am now.
All right. So let's do this. If you sat there completely warmed up and brought it up to 1,700 or 1,800 RPM, would it start to miss and break up?
No. If in my garage, no.
So it's only under load.
Right. So if I put the rear wheels off the ground, put it in third gear, and step on the brake slightly at this, you know, and I think I'll go from idle up through this RPM.
Right.
It bucks. If I go through it, now let's say I bring it up to 2,500 RPM on the street with a small load. If I go through it, you know what I mean? If I go to a higher RPM, it runs okay. I got to keep it over 2,500 RPM, and it'll run pretty good.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If you disconnect the EST bypass line and keep it in base timing and drive it, does it make any difference?
I don't know. I never did that.
All right,
I can do that easy.
Try that. That's number one. Number two, even though it doesn't break up and it seems to run normal, seat of the pants, if you were to take a timing light, hook a timing light up to, I don't know, pick a cylinder. Well, let's start with one, right?
One.
And let's take a timing light. Do you have an advanced light or just a regular light?
I have just a regular light.
Okay.
I can't advance.
That's fine. And let's find timing and bring it up to 1,700, 1,800 RPM where it's breaking up under load. Does the timing stay consistent? Does the mark, in other words, once it reaches total advance, whatever the number is, 25, 30, 35, whatever, when it gets to that point, 1,700, 1,800, 2,000, 2,200, 2,500, is the timing steady on the marker? Or is it scattered? Is it starting to bounce? If it's steady, my inclination is it's not spark related. All right? Even though this seems to have started with a no crank, no start, but something changed as a result of cleaning whatever the pickup that you cleaned. Do you own a voltmeter?
Yes.
Okay. How about if we took the voltmeter, tapped it into that pink wire, which is the feed from the ignition switch going to the ignition coil, all right, and checked and made sure that it had constant ignition switch voltage. Richard, sit tight. I got a couple of more points I want to go over with you when we come back. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. We are. Oh, no. As a matter of fact, you know what, Richard? Sit tight, babe. We're going to call you back in a little while. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. We'll be back right after this. Back, listeners. Ron Ananian and the car doctor. You know, fall is coming up not too far away now, a couple of weeks, and then behind that, old man winter is going to be upon us. And with the fall and winter driving season, sure comes the weather that makes driving your vehicle maybe a little bit more difficult. And we want to keep you safe, we want to keep you informed. So we thought it would be a good time for a little bit of tire 101. So, what some of the things you need to look for as you're considering going out to purchase tires, or maybe just look at your tires. Are the tires on your vehicle ready for the weather ahead? And we've reached out to Jenny Page. She is a product manager for Cooper Tire, and we're glad to have Jenny here with us today. And my spies tell me she's also a tire engineer, but I don't know if I can mention that, so I won't. But maybe we'll get some tire engineering stories out of her at some point, too. We'll see how we do today with time. Jenny, welcome aboard. Welcome to the Car Doctor.
Hey, Ron, I appreciate you inviting me in to talk about Tires 101. It's great to be here.
Let's start with the basics, right? Everybody always says, oh, my tires are worn out, or are my tires worn out? You know, what do tire tread wear indicators tell us, and what should we be looking for?
So the tire tread wear indicators are actually required by the Department of Transportation to be in any tire that's on the road. They're in the grooves of the tire, and they actually tell you when your tread is worn down to 2/32 of an inch, because at that point, it's really no longer legal for use on the roads. So you really need to be looking for those indicators, and when your tread lugs are worn even to those indicators, it means it's time to replace your tires. Now, in addition to those tread wear indicators, Cooper actually offers our wear square technology in a number of our lines. Ron, you and I were talking about the Cooper CS5 just before this interview, and in that CS5, we have that wear square, which is essentially a square that wears away as your tread wears. So if all four sides are there, you've got 100% of your tread wear. And then as each side of the square wears away, you lose 25% of your wear. So if you look at the square and there's only two sides to it, you know you're about 50% worn on your tread wear. So it's just a way to give consumers another way to look at their tires and kind of know where they're at with their tread life. And it gives you a chance to be able to kind of plan ahead for that purchase. Nobody likes to go spend hundreds of dollars on a new set of tires. So it gives you a chance to kind of be planning for and know about when you're going to need those new tires.
Everybody's always asking for, you know, they want the longest lasting tire. And why can't they make tires last longer? Which, you know, I think a tire on a vehicle that's properly maintained, aligned, suspension, air inflation, and rotation, I think tires last a good long time compared to the old days when I first started. You know, can rubber be improved to provide longer tire life?
You know, actually, a tire's composition really can increase the longevity for wear. In fact, the new Cooper Endeavor tire that we've just launched has a silica tread compound that gives us the ability to put a 65,000-mile tread wear warranty on that. Tires can be tuned to give you that long life. They can also be tuned for a number of different attributes, such as that sporty, spirited feel, right? Ultra-high-performance tires typically give you a more sporty ride, but they're not going to last as long. So there's certainly trade-offs when you're looking for those things. Some people are more interested in comfort and quiet, right? Are you looking for a really quiet tire? So it's important to talk to your tire shop and make sure they really understand what you're looking for and how you drive before you make that purchase decision on what tires you need.
So let's talk about the Cooper Endeavor. You brought it up, right? You know, what kind of testing, how long does it take? I'm just curious from my own knowledge. How long does it take? You know, how long has the Endeavor been in development? A year, 2 years, 3 years? You know, how long is a tire on the drawing board, and what does it take to bring to market like that time-wise?
Oh, it certainly takes quite a long time for any tire, the Endeavor or any tire line that we bring to market. Our engineers and designers put the tire through a lot of tests. We take the tires down to our vehicle test center down in Texas, where we put a lot of miles, literally thousands of miles, on these new tires between our test track in Texas, as well as laboratory testing that we do in our technical centers. So, like I said, literally thousands of miles are put on these new tire designs before the first one's ever available to the public. We're testing for things like tire noise, tire traction. How does it perform on wet pavement? How does it perform on dry pavement? If it's an off-road tire, we're looking for how it traverses sand and mud and rocks. And like you said, for the Endeavor Plus or for our new Cooper Discoverer Rugged Trek, which is an off-road tire, you can rest assured that those tires provide long-lasting, durable performance that's been tested and proved out by our testing engineers.
So it's been everything has been put through its paces, and it's measured in years, not months, in terms of how long it takes to get a tire to market.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So the new Endeavor, again, we'll talk about that. It's the latest product offering from Cooper. You know, how does the Endeavor stack up in the competition? Because obviously you had a competition in mind. You don't just say, let's just create a tire. You don't put 2 or 3 years worth of work and the cost into bringing a tire to market just for the sake of changing names. You know, what was your concept for the Endeavor? What did you guys want it to do amongst the competition in the marketplace? And, you know, when you do that, you know, was it longer tread life? Was it better safety? Was it better traction? What was it that, you know, created the need for Endeavor?
So we keep saying the Cooper Endeavor. Let me just clarify for the listening audience. So the Cooper Endeavor is actually a tire designed to fit sedans and coupes. But then we also have the Cooper Endeavor Plus, which is tuned more for sport utility vehicles. So it's one large line that covers everything from, you know, your Honda Fits up through your GMC Yukons. It covers the gamut between the Endeavor and the Endeavor Plus tire lines. So that tire line, like I had mentioned before, has a 65,000-mile tread wear warranty, and it has that trusted, dependable performance so that you can put the tires on and drive through your life without really having to think or worry about your tires. It's got rain channels that help flush out water so you don't have to be concerned about hydroplaning when you're driving. It's got biting edges to give you traction in the wet. It gives you that peace of mind, like I said, so you really don't have to think about your tires. And it fits a lot of popular vehicles. I threw a couple out, but Hyundai Sonatas, Honda Odysseys, Ford Escapes, Jeep Grand Cherokees. It fits the gamut, and it gives you, it's the right tire for a daily driver, for people looking for just a comfortable highway product.
So suffice it to say, it's the latest and greatest technology, both in design, tread wear, traction, and so on. It's what the engineers have tested on the test track, right? It's come to market now.
That's right. It's gone through a number of different prototypes to make sure that we've really dialed it in for what our consumers are looking for. Again, for a comfortable tire that you can put on and not have to think about, you know, outside of making sure your inflation pressure is up and you're inspecting your tires for cracks, bulges, punctures, things like that.
In our closing couple of minutes here, Jenny, I just want to touch on tread depth again. You know, some people say change tires at 430 seconds. Some say less than 230 seconds. What is the industry standard? How does a tire person explain it?
So Cooper recommends that drivers replace their tires when they're worn down to 230 seconds of an inch. And that's really if it's worn down to 230 seconds anywhere on the tread face. So you need to kind of be inspecting your tires around the whole tire. A lot of people are familiar with the penny test,
right,
where outside of your tread wear indicators, you can actually take a penny, make sure Abe Lincoln is upside down, and put it in your tread. And if the tread is not deep enough to cover Abe's head, then it's time to get new tires.
It's time to, of course, you have to find a penny in the days of the pandemic and no change, right? Which is, that's a whole nother problem. Let me ask you real quick before we go, can tires improve miles per gallon real quick?
You know, tires do affect your miles per gallon, but I think it's important for your listeners to know that the most important thing to improve your miles per gallon is really to check your inflation pressure. Improperly inflated tires have a huge effect on your gas mileage, not only your gas mileage, but also your tread life and your traction. Your tires are really the only thing between you and the road, and it's really important that you're checking your tires for proper inflation. We recommend checking at least monthly and before long trips.
On a regular basis. Jenny, thank you so much. It's been great. If the listeners want more information, they want to find out more about tire safety and the Cooper Endeavor line for both SUVs and passenger vehicles, where can they go? Where's the website?
So the website is coopertire.com, and you can get on there and explore everything from how to check your tires, learn about tire safety, learn about the new products like the Endeavor and the Endeavor Plus, and check out the full range of Cooper Tire products.
Perfect. Jenny, thanks a lot. You have a great rest of the afternoon. All right?
Hey, you too. Thanks, Ron.
You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. Don't go away.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
That's right, every once in a while I get to do it right. Hello, welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We want to say thanks again to Jenny Page from Cooper for stopping by. I forgot that we had her in the lineup today. And let me get back to Richard, who's been waiting there very patiently. Sorry about that, Richard. We sort of had a collision on air. Radio got in the way of radio today. We were talking about your 1990 Firebird prior to Jenny coming on board. We only had her for a limited time, so I couldn't change that. Thanks for understanding. My last comment prior to leaving you was, if you were to take a voltmeter, tap it into that pink wire where it comes into the connect, it comes into the distributor to the distributor cap, that's the positive feed from the ignition switch to the coil. Does it go away?
Okay.
I don't think it will, but it's something you can test. And as you always hear me say, diagnosing is sometimes telling what's good so you can eliminate and you'll come up with what's bad. All right? So disconnecting the EST, the spark stay, does timing stay true? You know, you could also go and look at opposite firing orders 1-843-6572, 1-843-6. So you could go to cylinder 6. You should be able to replicate the same timing mark on the front of the cover, triggering the timing light off of number 1 cylinder as you did on number 6, vice versa. So you could actually look to see. We called that split timing back in the day. And if there was anything larger than a 2 to 4 degree difference between the two, we would start to suspect things like wear at the cam gear, wear in the distributor gear, something that would affect timing out over the curve. Even the case of a bad timing chain is possible too. Just another way to look at it. All right. Back in the day, that was a common method to, we called it split timing and just going to the opposite cylinder in the firing order. Last, and this is where I think you'll end up. All right. I've saved the best for last, as you know, I always do. You can use, does your scan tool show data stream, or is it just codes only?
Just codes only.
Okay. There would be a way to look at fuel trim if it was data stream. In 1990 terms, it wasn't fuel trim long-term, short-term like we know today. I always thank God for OBD2 for the simplification it brought.
Yeah.
General Motors was using something called Block Learn and Integrator, which was the short and long-term fuel adjustment nomenclature for the day. But if you had a scan tool that showed that, I'd be curious to see if at the point of the engine, the car bucking and running badly like you described, does fuel trim change? And I'd be willing to bet it went lean. Just keeping that in mind, all right, if you happen to come up with a scan tool that does it. But what I'd like you to do, and I know it's a bit of a pain in the neck because tune port cars, the injectors aren't the easiest things in the world to get to, is take your voltmeter, set it to ohms, right? Measure resistance.
Yes.
And let's do a resistance check of each injector, cold, before you start it in the morning. All right?
Okay.
Let's look and see. Spec was 16 to 18 ohms resistance. 15 doesn't scare me. 20 doesn't scare me. Start the car up. Get it warm. You know, bring it up to temperature. Let it run for a half hour. Take it for a ride as best you can. Don't drive it too much because it's broke. All right? And come back, and as much as you can bear to do it on a warm engine, do another resistance check of the injectors.
Okay. Ron, I've called you before, and I had a similar problem, but it sounded like it was bad gas, and you told me to ohm out the fuel injectors.
Right.
And I did that, and I had a different ohm rating on the middle injectors, like, let's say, number 3 and 5 and 4 and 6. So I replaced all the injectors. Now, you told me to do that in 2016, so the injectors were changed along with the EGR at that time.
Okay.
So the injectors were changed. So I can do that again.
Has this problem been going on since 2016, Richard?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Okay. The injectors corrected the other problem, which it ran like it had bad gas. Sometimes it would run good. Sometimes it would run awful.
Okay.
And when it was hot. When it was cold, it was okay.
All right. So let's do it again. You know the test then. Let's do it again. Because who's to say the new rebuilt injectors for the 30-year-old vehicle? You know?
Yeah.
New doesn't mean good.
They're new injectors, but they're from an aftermarket company. I won't mention the name.
Right. You can mention names. Yeah. Anything's possible. Listen, new
Standard Motor Products.
Yeah, and
Standard Motor Products.
And listen, Standard didn't make those. I don't think they're new. I think they're remanufactured, meaning that I'm wrong, but I don't know that they're new. I think they're remans. It depends on what the box said. And even if they're new, I don't know, sitting with fuel in them. You know, during long periods of time, it all has an effect on these. But those injectors were problematic. So, Richard, I got to go. I'm up against the clock. Do those things. Call me back. Let me know where you stand, and we can kind of pick it up from there, and we'll figure out what's wrong with this vehicle. Good luck. Keep me posted. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. I think this is timely after talking to Richard, and thanks for allowing me to spend time with Richard this hour. I think he needed the help with his Pontiac. This is in from Mitchell One, MitchellOne.com. You know, Mitchell One does a great job of posting these confirmed fixes in their Short Track community based on repair orders. And this week's is probably pretty close to what I was thinking along terms with Richard in terms of diagnose, diagnose, diagnose. They talk about a late model Chevy Silverado with a code P1516 throttle actuator control module circuit performance. And most people would have just replaced the throttle body and said, okay, that must be it, right? They go through step by step, line by line, talking about voltages, connector tests, checking, make sure that the connector passes a drag test, taking you right down the line to find a bad connector, not a bad throttle body, because testing is what it's all about. Thanks to the folks at Mitchell One, MitchellOne.com. Great job. I'm Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor, reminding each and every one of you, till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.